And welcome back to New Every Day. I'm Carrie.
And my name is Jen. And on today's show, we are in part three of Life in the Desert. And you know what? You shouldn't feed the animals.
Part of their body. And then when it gets cold, those muscles contract and the fur covers it and helps to insulate the bat when it gets cold, because as we learned, the desert can be quite cold, especially at night in the winter.
Yes.
So amazing, amazing things about these bats that you would just never know, that God created them specifically for this environment. And they thrive because of it.
Right. And so, and as you said, the Lord has created them for this environment. He's given them everything they need survive. Like, we went and we talked, and you talked about in a previous show the pufffish, who ate specifically a type
fly,
which larva? Was specifically for in that environment. So as long as that fly is in that environment, then that fish is going to survive.
Yeah.
And so it was just very interesting as we listened to the Batman talk about the adaptations for these bats, and as and he even talked about the hares, the great big long ears. And as you look at desert hares, or rabbits, their ears are so big, but that's how they regulate the
heat. Radiators,
yeah, in their system.
Yeah.
And so it was very interesting just to, you think about this and to think about the desert animals. And one of our guides said, don't put your hands
where you can't see.
Where you can't see, because that's where a snake might be,
a scorpion.
So just be very careful where you're putting your hands. And so,
you know what? I just had a thought. When you look at the desert animals and how they've adapted to the hot weather, if you look at us living in Canada in the snow, like, we are so not equipped. Like, we don't have any fur. My dad says that when you have a beard, it's a whole lot warmer. And so I kind of get why guys in the north grow beards. It's like a face hat.
God has equipped us, actually, to look after. He has equipped us for our environment.
Yeah, but, yeah. He's given us the ability to make clothes.
He has given us, praise the Lord.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
So anyways, thinking about the desert, and we just went in thinking, okay, what kind of animals are going to be here? Like, there aren't going to be any. How can they possibly survive? And yet God has equipped them to survive in the environment in which he's placed them.
But there's an interesting clash that happens when humans start interacting with animals, and sometimes it's not a good thing.
Well, no, because one of the signs said, please do not feed the animals. And we've seen this lots of times wherever we've gone. It says, don't feed the animals for the reason of, and normally they show it because you're killing the animal from a, they're going to eat the plastic, the food isn't good for them.
And it makes them sick.
It makes them sick. And we're like, okay,
I get that.
Don't feed the animals because it's not good for them. But this one sign, it was so cool because it said, don't feed the animals, you will make them beggars, and you are giving them a death sentence. Which I was like, oh, well, that's a totally different perspective than we've seen before.
Yeah.
Because, and the whole sign basically said, when you feed the animals, then it creates them to be beggars, and they become less afraid of people, they come around more often, and then they actually will end up having to be killed, because they may, in fact, attack a person, because they've become so used to people feeding them. I found that a very interesting take on it, that we think that we're helping the animals by feeding them. Or maybe we just think it's cool for that cool picture. It's like, oh,
well, I do like to feed chipmunks when they come to your hand. Or birds. It's amazing. It's a wonderful feeling.
Right.
But you're actually causing a lot of harm to them. And so, you know, we were trying to find correlations between the things we saw in the desert and how, and in our own lives and in our own spiritual lives. And Jen made an interesting point that sometimes when we're living in community with other people, and you want to help someone and you are giving them a handout, you can actually create over dependence. So what were your thoughts on that, Jen? I forget exactly what you said.
Well, because I really started thinking about it, because we think that we're helping. I'm just trying to remember that passage that I read to you before, Carrie, from 1 Thessalonians?
Yeah, it's on my phone there.
I know, but I can't remember your password, and I certainly don't want to announce it on TV. But basically, okay, hold on a second. She's going to mouth me what it is, so I'm covering up the screen. Okay, we're back.
I'll change my password. Oh, whatever. I don't know whether to put these on or off. It's so bright. California is a beautiful state.
Okay. So what I said to Carrie a few days ago about...
Whoa, I'm speeding.
About... Well, because it came up, I read the Bible every day, and I send her a verse to think about that I have read, and I remember reading this verse about the importance of actually looking after ourselves. And
it kind of came across as being self-sufficient.
Right. And now I can't find it again. But that's okay.
Basically said, work with your hands so that don't be idle, so that you can live a productive life and not be dependent on other people, not be overly dependent on other people.
Right. And from my perspective, I was thinking, yes, because so often people come to, everybody has needs, and we are called into community. I have no problem with that. In fact, I struggle with that a lot of times. The fact that God has called us into community, and we are to figure out how to get along and actually how to interrelate.
Yeah, because yesterday we were talking about people living in the desert, like the desert fathers from back in the day, and how they would just live alone and spend time with God. I said, Jen, would you like that?
Yes, I would.
She would. I think I would not survive. I just couldn't be by myself all the time.
And I was thinking, oh, bring it on. I want to raise chickens and pigs and make my own carrots, but plant my own carrots, and you know, sometimes I just think I was born in the wrong
she's a
century.
Pioneer at heart.
Sometimes
really.
I think I am. So anyhow, and so it got me thinking as far as, well, what is our, oh, here it is, 1 Thessalonians 4:11-12. Make it your goal to live a quiet life, minding your own business and working with your hands, just as we instructed you before. Then people who are not believers will respect the way you live, and you will not need to depend on others. And being in a church setting, we are often confronted with people who are in need. We have a care program, a benevolence program, and where we help people. And I believe that we are called to help people. But that sign with the, it had a picture of a wolf on it, and it said, do not feed the animals because you are giving them a death sentence, really challenged me, because I thought, well, how do we help people who are struggling? What is the balance?
Between what?
Between enabling people.
To not work for themselves?
To not work for themselves. Like, you are not helping them if you are continuing to hand out to them. Right?
Yeah.
It's like handout after handout after handout after handout, but you're not actually helping them to take responsibility.
So what, like, how then do you discern? When do you say, no, go get a job? Like, that feels so weird.
But why does it feel weird?
Well, okay.
Like, if somebody's just sitting around on Ontario Works at Home and not working, like, willfully choosing not to work, even though they are able to work, or in some cases, it's they, I want to say, work the system.
Oh, yes, I've met these people. They know, I see them all the time.
So I guess that's what I struggle with, and especially when Paul says, work with your hands. Like, you don't sit at home and expect the government to look after you.
But this is written for the church.
Right, okay. So
that's,
what about
that's
believers?
A difference.
So then as believers, is that a different perspective then?
It is a different perspective.
Okay.
Because we're called to care for the other. And I feel like the love of Christ is so transformative that as you are loving and caring for these people, then they see the love of Christ. They have the opportunity to be saved, to hear the gospel. Your love and kindness in helping them, I feel like opens their ears to receive the gospel. And then pray for them that God transforms their heart and motivates them to be working and contributing. But I feel like it's completely different the way that we can view the church versus people outside of the church.
Okay, I agree.
And also, I feel like I've been challenged in the past where sometimes I might not want to give a gift if it seems, this sounds bad, like if it seems like a handout, like I'm just giving something away. If I'm unsure whether that's going to enable the person or how they're going to use the money or how they're going to use the gift.
Right.
But then I felt convicted that it's really not my job to wonder that. If God is asking me to give, he loves a cheerful giver, and I'm going to give and trust that he's going to do what he wants with it.
Right, and I totally agree. I totally agree. If God has called you to give the money or to give the time or to give the gift, I have no problem with that whatsoever. I think when we choose, if someone in the church needs to get a job because they I don't need to go out and get the job because the church will look after me. Like, Paul is very clear about widows, widows,
true.
That he actually counsels them to get married again.
Yeah, that's true.
And so there is,
like,
this,
don't be a busybody.
Don't be a busybody. Like,
that's true, Jen.
He's very clear. You need to do something. Work with your hands. Contribute something to your care. Do not expect the church to look after you. And it's very interesting because he says that to widows, right? And he actually says to family members, he's like, if your parents are struggling, then you help them.
Yeah, don't let your own family be dependent on the church. That's your job, to look after your own family first.
Yes, and I think
that's not
go ahead.
That's not really common in North America.
No.
We want to, if our family has need, often ditch them to the system. Like in Emerge, we get drop-offs all the time of people, they just are not wanting to care for their family. Yeah. So they make up elaborate stories of why they can't be cared for at home when we clearly see that they can be. Oh, yeah. Especially Christmas. Well, it's tragic.
Oh.
Anyways, but it's not common. Whereas other cultures, like in India, all the families, they live together and they take care of each other. And especially so for the church.
So, and I think that's part of the wrestle is, are the people that the church is helping, are they able to contribute in some way?
Yeah.
Or are they literally just relying on the church to take care of them rather than actually contributing something themselves as a believer?
But then how do we lovingly do that? How do you lovingly motivate someone? I think in part it comes back to identity. Because part of there's like a pinwheel of poverty. And there's a whole bunch of different spokes on the wheel that contribute to someone living in poverty, whether it's poverty of spirit or actually physically in poverty. And I think part of that is identity, whether you don't think that you are worth elevating yourselves to a better position.
Right.
You don't think you're worth getting a good job. You can't get that good job. So you just keep living in the cycle of receiving from other people because that's just how you think you are.
Right.
Whether it comes off a little as a person rough around the edges or a little crusty, maybe underneath that is that misunderstanding of who they really are, that they are worth that.
Right.
And we're actually on our way to a church service this morning in LA. We're going to the Dream Center, right downtown Echo Park, Los Angeles. And it was started by a pastor named Matthew Barnett. And we'll put a link to the Focus on the Family episode where Jim Daly interviews Matthew and asks him, as a pastor, how he got this church started in downtown LA. And essentially, Matthew saw a great need and wanted to fill that need and ask God to help him. And his mantra is, see a need, fill a need. See a need and fill it. Find a hurt and heal it. And he's actually, with the church and the community, purchased an old hospital. And that hospital has become a safe haven for people in the sex trade. It's a place where people who are homeless can go. They feed 80,000 people receive care from this church that never sleeps every month.
Wow.
And it's so easy to turn our eyes away from people who are in desperate need. So I think maybe after we go to this church service, we may have a different perspective on this conversation. I agree that we do need to work and contribute. And there's satisfaction in that, enjoyment in that, when you become part of a family. Another aspect of the Dream Center is that when people come in, if they've been, if they're coming from abuse or if they're coming from poverty or if they're coming from substance abuse, and then they come out of that, they're invited to turn their pain into service. So you actually serve from your past. You take the hurt and everything that's going from your past, and you actually use that. You're serving other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called work therapy there. And it becomes therapy when you're able to contribute to a community like that. It feels so good.
Right. And it is important to, that's just it, right? They are contributing. They're making a contribution. So it really is, and I think you touched on this a little bit before, Carrie. We are called to love others. Like Jesus said, I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink.
Yeah.
You know, I was in prison and you came. I have no problem with any of that whatsoever. But I guess my perspective is, if you are able to take care of yourself and you willfully choose not to, right?
Yeah.
And so you are expecting someone else to take care of you. It'd be like sitting at home all the time and saying, oh, Carrie will make supper. Okay, Carrie will clean the house.
Yeah.
Okay, Carrie will shovel the walk. Okay, Carrie's going to put gas in my car.
Yeah.
Okay, Carrie's going to get the groceries. Carrie's going to make sure the bills are paid. Like,
and if I didn't say something to you as a friend, it would probably be unwise and uncaring, because I know that eventually it's not going to be harmful. It's going to be harmful for you. Because what if something happened to me?
Because I would move out.
Mostly because Jen's a good cook.
So I guess
it's harmful for you.
The wrestle, right? And I think what you said, because in the long run, it isn't good for me. Because what happens when you get married and move away, or I get married and move away? My husband would not be very happy with me. all of a sudden, he has to do absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And so I guess, I think what you said is we have to really pray and ask the Lord for discernment to know What is a mindset that they have? Do they feel that they have nothing to contribute? Is it a way that they've just grown up, that they've always had, you know, someone look after them, so they've never really thought about looking after their own needs? It really is. It says, like, don't feed the animals because you're giving them a death sentence. Yeah. How do we as believers actually build up one another so that we are full in the body of Christ?
Yes, a contributing member.
Yes.
And yet, there have been times where I've been the recipient of people giving me things, and it could have been something that I really could have done by myself. I really could have worked hard and figured it out. I really could have, you know, hemmed my own pants, or I really could have, whatever, you know, called a cab and gotten home instead of asking someone for a ride, you know, when my car was stuck, because I had the money to pay for it. Instead, my friend came and picked me up, and it was just that loving act that just built.
But you weren't relying on them. You weren't saying, I'm going to call so-and-so because they have to come and pick me up. Somebody in the church has to come and pick me up.
Oh, I called. I put on Facebook.
But you know what?
I need to ride home.
But it was
when I could have paid for it.
Right. But it wasn't, I guess my perspective is,
it's not an all the time thing.
It wasn't a reliant, well, they should be doing this. It wasn't an entitlement thing.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's what it comes down to for me, is I'm entitled to receive this care. I guess that's what I struggle with, is the attitude behind it. And I'm certainly, if someone, you know, you certainly don't do that all the time. So it's the mindset behind it, right? That.
And yet there's people, I think, maybe they do consistently need financial help, but maybe they're able to give in other ways. Like, they're able to give their time in the church. They're able to volunteer in other ways. So I think it can look different for different people.
Right. And I'm not saying it doesn't look differently. I'm just saying, how do we make sure that we are doing it as much as it depends on us? Like John Wesley said, you work all you can, so you save all you can, so you can give all you can.
Yeah.
So that had nothing to do actually with him himself. It had everything to do with being others focused, so he could contribute. So we work so we can contribute to the work of God, not so that we can receive.
Yeah.
So.
And then I feel like, you know, when God has helped us to save more and, you know, work more, save more, all those kinds of things, then we can lovingly help people get to that place where they can see that, yes, oh yeah, no, you can give too. See, trust God and you can give, and it's exciting, it's loving, and it's a wonderful thing to be part of the body. So I think it's a loving thing to be able to help other people to realize that and to see their gifts and what they can actually give. But I think it's shaped by our identity and our perspective.
Yeah, and I'm not disagreeing. I think it's the love and, but it's also the word that sometimes has to come to someone and say, you know what? You need to contribute. Because sometimes it is that word. Like, and we are running out of time, but it was people who actually spoke words of correction into my life that caused me to grow. Mm-hmm. To say, Jennifer, look what you're doing. Is this helpful? And it was that turned me.
Really?
Yes.
Mm.
So that's why I'm like, and I think correction is a form of love. God disciplines us because he loves us. So the part that I'm struggling with.
Yeah.
Is I understand love. I understand it. But where does the correction come in? Because we love.
I guess it's called tough love for a reason.
So you can tell that we're still wrestling this out, and it's time to go. So we want you to wrestle it out. We want you to think, okay, you know, how do I wrap this all together? How do I think about helping others? How do I, you know, love others well? You know, am I contributing as I should be contributing? Am I relying on the church as I should rely on the church? Like, it's this whole wonderful package of being together.
Keep left onto I-5 south, then keep left.
Time to go.
So may the Lord bless you today. May you have the mind of Christ. May you learn how to love each other well and to grow together as the body of Christ.
Is it here?
No, you're supposed to keep left.
Okay, I did.
Yes.
Anyways,
we gotta go because we gotta figure this out. Things are great.
See you later.
Bye.
Keep left.
Not Sacramento.
Not go to Sacramento.
We want to go to MPA. My day.